MENA Watch, der Talk.
Good morning to Tuhuk in Iraqi Kurdistan, Aya. Before we are going to talk about the situation of the Yazidis in the moment, it would be nice you could shortly introduce yourself and tell us a little bit what you are working on and the background of your activities.
Good morning, Thomas. Thank you for making this interview with me. It's Aya from Jinda Organization. I work as project coordinator. It's been almost 8 years that I am working with Jinda, Jinda for Women and Girls Affected by War, basically working in Duhok Governorate, north of Iraq, Kurdistan. We work for support of women Yazidis and their children in this region, providing psychosocial support, providing vocational courses, providing job opportunities for the women and ladies, and opening lots of projects to support their psychosocial state and also for providing aid for them since 2014.
Okay, now in August, we'll have like the third tenth anniversary of the genocide against the Yazidis. Could you maybe tell us shortly what's the overall situation of the Yazidi community in Iraq like 10 years after?
Yeah. The 10th anniversary marks a tragedy for the genocide that happened to Yazidis in 2014 when Daesh attacked ISIS. The situation of Yazidi is not, the Yazidis in the camp is not getting any better. And focusing on the current situation that the government is now giving them the chance to receive money to go back to their homeland, which is Shingal, which is we consider another tragedy for them. It's another genocide because going back to the place that they were kidnapped, they were under slavery. It's a kind of a genocide for them because they have been almost 10 years in the camps where they found safety and peace in KRG, and now again we are re-commemorating all the sadness and all the tragedy that happened to the Yazidis in 2014. So their situation is now is not in a very good state because most of them, they are forced to go back to Shingal because they are telling them that the camps will be closed. And if the camps will be closed, they are now in a decision between where to go and find a safe place again. So Shingal is not now safe because of the different military forces.
This is followed by people who are not that close to the problems and the topic. So let's go back to 2014. The Islamic State overran the original homeland of the most Yazidis living in Iraq, as the Sinjar Mountain, with its capital Shingal. Yeah. Many were killed. A lot of women were taken captured and turned into sex slaves. And back then, hundreds of thousands of Yazidis escaped to the Iraqi Kurdistan region, the autonomous Iraqi Kurdistan region, and settled in a lot of camps around Duhok under very, very difficult circumstances, right? So now what we're facing is, I think you might know the number better. What I know, it's about 300,000.
300,000, yes.
Almost. Are still living 10 years after the genocide inside these camps that are shattered. Yes. Basically in Duhok province where you were working.
Yes.
Now, this is a very bad situation. People shouldn't live in camps. But what we're facing now is that these camps, who were mainly run by the Iraqi central government, because in Iraq, there are always two governments, right? The Kurdish government and the Iraqi central government, who provide services like the schools, health centers. So This government now decided that the homeland of the Yazidis, Sinjar, is safe enough to return and wants to close down these camps. And that affects, again, hundreds of thousands of people who basically are not happy living in camps, but had at least something like a bit of security and services and supports as internal displaced people in Kurdistan, right?
Yes, yes. And most of them, they tried to go back to Shingal and they tried to find a safe place again. But unfortunately, their homes were destroyed in the war in 2014. So they cannot rebuild their homes again because of lack of support. And also, they don't have the funds or the money to rebuild their homes again. So basically, they're now in between how to rebuild their lives again in Shingal, where everything was destroyed back then, and also the security there, they cannot trust anyone anymore, because they had friends, they had families, they had neighbors, but now it's mixed and they don't know how to rebuild their life again in Shingal again. So basically now they find Kurdistan is the most safe place. And even though that situation in the camp is not like we can say the best place to live, but they find it as a safe place for them. So
we are facing now basically is, if I'm right, so there are 300,000 survivors of this Yazidi genocide, and it's many also in governments abroad in Europe and in the West recognize that this has been a genocide.
Yes.
With all its impacts, a lot of people lost family members.
Yeah.
Still, Yazidis are very, very afraid that this can happen again, because as a non-Islamic minority, there is a lot of racism and a lot of prejudices against them. So if you would ask them, am I right? They would prefer in the current situation to stay in the camps. To stay in the camps. So now, basically, it's not because a lot of them return or there is a big movement going back to Sinjar or Shingal. It's just like the Iraqi government in Baghdad decided we want to get rid of these internal displaced people. They're different groups. They're Arabs who fled ISIS from central Iraq, who are returning. Yes. And the biggest group now are these Yazidis. So there was a basically political decision. We want them to leave. We want them out basically of the books, right?
Unfortunately, this is the situation now. And even the camp management, they are now receiving lots of cases asking them what to do in this case. And they are in a very bad situation. They don't know where what will happen to them next, because they have given them a deadline for going back to Shingal, and they don't know. They're in a situation that they don't have the resources. They don't have the courage to go back to Shingal again. And even most of them are survivors who have witnessed the slavery, witnessed the kidnapping, witnessed the genocide of their grandparents, of their husbands, of their brothers and sisters. So it was a very, very difficult situation for them now to go back to where the trauma will go back again, and the place where they left. It was a safe place for them, but now it's all what you can say. It's all about the bad situation is coming back to them again. It's horrible, actually. We have received lots of cases calling us. They said that I just want to live in Duhok. I want to live in areas near to Duhok. I don't want to go back to Shingal. It's not safe anymore. I cannot return back all the bad memories that they had back then.
Okay. So what happened is basically the Iraqi government said, whoever we want to close the camps. And everyone who returns is getting about $250 to rebuild, $2,500
yeah.
As a kind of a, um, fee to rebuild his houses and to restart his life.
Yes, exactly.
So, and people who don't want to return are not even receiving this money.
No.
Okay.
And the people living in the camp, they are trying to get this money because they say they think that maybe after the camps are closed, we might be in a very difficult situation where we are not going to receive such money to try to, for example, to rent a house maybe or rent somewhere in Duhok or other areas outside the camp. So they're in a very difficult situation actually, and many of them, they are staying in the camp. We have lots of cases staying in the camp. They're choosing to stay, not to go back to Shingal. But we have some cases that went to Shingal and they're returned back to the camp. They don't find it as a good opportunity for them to stay in Shingal.
Okay. So, but if I receive this amount of money, officially, in statistics, I have returned to Shingal.
Yeah. Yes.
So, basically, the Iraqi government can claim now this amount of people officially returned to Shingal, though they are not a problem anymore. They are not internal displaced persons within Iraq.
Yes.
So officially also, when like the governments in Europe will deal with the issue, in future we'll have much lower numbers than we had in the past.
Yes.
While in fact on the ground nothing really changed.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so so now, I mean, these are Iraqi citizens, so the Iraqi government has no right to force them to move from one place in Iraq to the other. So, as you said, now, I mean, now it's almost end of July, and officially the camp should have been closed in the end of July. But
yes,
still, a lot of people are inside the camps. People don't want to leave, and it's very clear it's impossible to move these hundreds of thousands of people to a totally non-safe region within like a week. So, and there is a second important actor, the Kurdistan regional government, because these camps are within the federal zone of Kurdistan. And there is this kind of always two responsibilities, because I think it's important to know Sinjar officially belongs to Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan region. So officially, Iraq is responsible for these people. But currently, they are living in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. So they are under two kind of responsibilities.
Two authorities. Yes, two authorities.
So, what is the Kurdistan regional government doing in the moment with this situation?
In the moment, they are offering the safe spaces, which is the camps. They are not telling them that these camps are always your safe place. So they're trying with the central government that they offered them actually until the end of the year that they stay in the camps. But no one knows what will happen after at the end of July, because the central government have a different decision. So they're trying at their best to leave the camp community and the camp officially until the end of the year. But the doors are always closed, always open for them, for the camp community. And they're trying to support them also with any kind of support. So that basically the camp management and also all the staff, they will stay until the end of the year, and but we don't know what will happen after the end of July for regarding the compensation and for receiving the money for going back to Shingal. So
but
they're
now,
trying.
Okay, but now, for example, the schools in the camps are basically based on the Iraqi school curriculum.
The Iraqi schools.
So they were financed and they were supported by the central government. So,
exactly.
For example, what happens now in the new semester with these schools? Are they open? Are they closed? Can Yazidi kids continue education or not?
They are still also not sure about it. They think that until the end of the July, they will know what will happen next. So because there are lots of negotiation between UN and also the central government and the Iraqi government, the latest update is that they are negotiating the situation, but they don't know until the end of July. So
yeah, so even now, if I'm a student in a school, I'm born in a camp, I don't know anything else but a camp, my family is a survivor's family, I don't know if I can go still to school in autumn.
They don't know their situation yet. They don't know what language they will study, what they don't know, which school they will attend. Is it near? Is it far? Is it in Shingal? Is it in Duhok? Is it in areas near to Duhok? They don't know. So lots of pressure for the families also.
In the beginning, you said this feels like a continuation of the genocide. This is very harsh vocabulary. Yes. So, but I suppose what you mean is that now, again, the whole surviving community of Yazidis is basically thrown into cold water and doesn't have any perspective or any idea what's going to happen to them in 2 months and 3 months and 5 months, right?
Exactly. No one knows. And they're in, even when we ask them, like, what they are going to do, they don't know. I don't know. Can you advise me what to do? I don't know. They don't know what to do. So it's really a big chaos. The situation is not getting any better. And it's going to be 10 years of genocide. So lots of pressure on them, lots of offers, but no offer is leading to a better life for them.
So you're working for a humanitarian organization. What's the kind of discussions? What are the plans? How is the coordination ongoing to react on this new crisis?
So we are planning to continue our support for the Yazidi community wherever they were, where they're located, even if they're outside the camps. So we are in continuous support for them. We are now in coordination with the community here, with the other NGOs, trying to find out how we can help the projects and also how to continue our projects, ongoing projects in the camp. But currently, we always support them, and we are continuing on supporting them if they are in the camp or outside the camp, because lots of negotiation happening that maybe some of them, they want to go outside the camp, which is a near area or village in Duhok. So basically, this kind of number of Yazidis, they will stay in Duhok or in the government of in the KRG government. We'll always try to support them wherever they are, and we will continue our support even in Shingal or in other areas in Kurdistan.
So after the meetings you had with the UN and with other organizations, what would be kind of the most urgent demands you have towards the UN, towards Western governments, and then towards the governments of Iraq and Kurdistan?
The demands is on supporting the survivors of ISIS, and also supporting the children, because they don't know now what will happen next to their situation, and also how they are going to cope with the environment. But we always support them, and we always try to support them with the citizenship project, with the citizenship concept, that they are an Iraqi citizen, and they have to demand their rights. They have to demand right of education. They have to demand the rights of being a local citizen in Iraq. You have the same right as a local, as a Duhoki, as a Iraqi citizen. So now we are trying to put them in a situation where all the services, all the rights have to be gained by them, and also have to be offered to the local community of Yazidis also.
Now, while all this happens with the Yazidis in Iraq, for example, Germany started to withdraw the the status of some of the Yazidi refugees here and also started to deport Yazidis back to Iraq, claiming that there are safe places inside Iraq and Yazidis are not persecuted as a group anymore.
Yes.
So that's running parallel. Just recently, there was the attempt to reach a countrywide stop of deportations of Yazidis, but it failed. So how do you see this relation that now also, like, there is this kind of start of deportation from Yazidis, particularly from Germany, but other European countries, how this is seen within the community?
Basically, the Yazidis who have find another home in Germany or in Europe, they found it as a golden opportunity for them for rebuilding their lives, especially for survivors. Even after they came back from the captivity, when they came here, they saw that living here again bring up the tragedy and trauma that they have experienced. But if for those who have went to Germany, they found a new home, a new place to start over their lives again, and new opportunities for them in Europe, basically. Getting back again to the same trauma, to the same place where they have faced all of this kind of tragedy and all of this slavery and rape is very, very bad for their psychological state, as they're rebuilding the trauma again and it's coming back to them. And even in Iraq, the situation is very, very limited for them because they don't have job opportunities, they don't have educational opportunities. They will stay in the tent or in an area where the community sees her as a survivor and where she have less, we don't have money to bring to her family, or she wants to be empowered again to support her psychological state. So basically living in Germany or in other area, and now they said that they will deport these Yazidis again. It's very, very bad for their psychological state. Even after we have worked lots of years with our social workers, with the psychologists to support them mentally, but now coming back again is not helping their state. So this is very bad for them, and we demand that each person who have found a new place and found a new home or found the support that they deserve, going like this dream, all this dream that they can come true for them, and they say that they have to deport them again to this situation that they don't know now where to live and where to go again. It's really, really not acceptable.
So basically, we're taught. I mean, now even the one place that became a second home after the genocide, the camps, and I mean, yeah. It means a lot if a camp is becoming your second home.
Exactly.
Are under threat. So,
yeah, right, yeah.
And now organizations who usually don't want to keep camps because camps are a horrible place to live in are now fighting for people to have at least a chance to live in a camp, which says, I think, a lot. So that's the current situation. So very frankly, do you think that Yazidis have a future in Iraq?
The future of Yazidis in Iraq is still not determined. They don't know if they have their rights again, or they will have the right to live in a good environment, in a safe environment. It's always a threat for them, because of the genocide. They think themselves that they are targeted again. They maybe will go again to the same experience in 2014. They're in a threat because they're a minority, and they feel threatened in Iraq. So living in Europe is safe for them, but now again with the deportation, it's not making the situation even better.
Thank you very, very much. Is there anything else you would like to kind of focus on, or you think we forgot in our talk?
Thank you so much, Thomas, for making this interview and always for supporting the Yazidi community here and delivering the voices of the unheard voices. Is a pleasure for us to help them and to support them. And hopefully we can make a change for their lives.
Okay, thank you very much. And then I'll have a nice day in the burning heat in Iraq, huh?
Thank you, thank you. Yes. Yes, thank you so much.
Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think Tank. Auf unserer Website finden Sie täglich aktuelle Informationen und Analysen. Besuchen Sie uns. Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think Tank. Auf unserer Website finden Sie täglich aktuelle Informationen und Analysen. Besuchen Sie uns.